Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. Well, first off this morning, we're going to talk about, well, with a young group of runners, competitive runners, not your everyday runners, who will blow your mind with what they've accomplished. We'll speak with about six of them from age 6 up to age 11, and their parents. Their parents will tell us a little bit about how they have inspired these young runners.
Then we'll speak with Zelda LaGrange. She's the author of Good Morning, Mr. Mandela. She was Nelson Mandela's longtime personal assistant and honorary granddaughter. It's the story of Nelson Mandela from a truly unique perspective.
This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
The Glitter Tent at Stein Erickson Lodge is a proud supporter of KPCW. The Glitter Tent restaurant offers regional American cuisine with Chef Zane Holmquist's seasonal menus. Located mid-mountain at Deer Valley Resort, the Glitter Tent serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. Sunday brunch with live music. Reservations recommended. 645-6455.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa Saturnino. I'm excited to announce a new Intermountain InstaCare right here in Park City. We provide access to urgent care without having to leave the area. Instead of waiting in line, call us at 435-649-7705. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Vinto is a proud sponsor of KPCW. Vinto offers wood-fired pizza and seasonal Italian cooking for lunch and dinner. Nestled at the bottom of Lower Main Street, Vinto is open year-round and now offers a summer menu with new seasonal appetizers, salads, sandwiches, pasta, pizza, and cocktails. More at vinto.com or 615-9990.
Hi, this is Kevin Stocking, president of Heber Valley Bank. We offer a full spectrum of loans for lots, construction, HELOCs, commercial, and personal needs. Our loan decisions are made locally. Heber Valley Bank is a proud supporter of KPCW. We are located in Heber City and Midway and at Grand Valley Bank in Park City. HeberValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, it's now a 30-year tradition, the annual July 4th 5K Fun Run. And of course, it happened a few weeks ago. But this year, 1,121 participants lined up for the mass start. And for those who know this race, even though it's called a fun run, there is some strategy involved at the start. It seems every year there are more and more kids finding their way to the front of the pack for that self-seeding start. So the idea is to get out fast so as not to get caught in the melee that ensues as the front wave hits the first left, then right turn. Tim, you should be telling this story.
It is part of my story.
It is your story.
I have more to add to it.
So, as many of you know in town, there's a left and a right and 100 yards into the downhill start, keeping a good tempo, and then you run by the hills at Silver Star, and that's where the pack always thins. And the kids who go out too fast realize, whoops, they made a mistake. But then there are those kids, like these six kids who have joined us in the studio, that, well, crush the pack. And Tim Henney, they crushed you. And this is why they're joining us, because you have been.
Should I tell my story?
Go ahead.
This is the story I've been telling since the 4th of July, and I told it right at the finish line because I lined up, followed that strategy, and a little bit to my surprise, as we were going up the hills by Silver Star, where things normally thin out, I looked around, and I was working pretty hard, not having the best day, and I noticed there are a lot of kids still with me. And then about at the turnaround, which is halfway, a mile and a half into this thing, I looked around, and there were still a lot of kids with me. And I'm not talking teenage kids. I'm talking little kids. And as I struggled back toward the finish, thinking, okay, these kids can't keep this up, I heard a voice behind me saying, okay, Henry, come on, this is the flat part, keep running, catch up to me. And I heard pat, 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 the pitter-patter of little feet as I was huffing my way into the last half mile, and little Henry went by me. And I said, well, you know, maybe I can catch him on the downhill, because I'm pretty fast on the downhills, as Henry pulled away from me on the downhills. And then into the finish, Henry pulled away from me some more as I was giving my best effort, and he beat me by about 20 seconds or so. So, of course, I get across the finish line and start telling the story about how little Henry, because I only knew him as Henry at this point, who had to be 7, maybe 8, at the outside 9, and definitely under 10 years old, because I knew nothing about Henry at this point, had beaten me in the 5K run. And I told this story to a bunch of people, and somebody then heard that and sent me the results from the race. And he said, good news, little Henry was 9, not 7 like you thought. Bad news, 17 seconds behind you, a 6-year-old. And that's kind of the framework of what...
And was that Jameson?
That was Jameson right over here. So a 6-year-old running a 5K at speed. Now, okay, my ego's was a little bruised. Maybe, you know, I didn't have the best day. But it's not about my ego and my day. I think what's interesting about this story, well, it is about my ego and my day and my age and all that. But what's really interesting about this story is we have two families in the studio with us today, and they both are comprised of basically the same age kids. One has 2 sons and a daughter, and one has 2 daughters and a son. And these families have kids who are running 5Ks at very young ages at speed. So when I started to look at the results, I found it wasn't just these families, although these families are very interesting because they match up so closely and ran so fast. There was a slew of kids. There were 28 6-year-old, 8 and under boys from 8 to 6-year-old that ran, and 29 girls from 8 and under that ran this race out of the 1,121. And if you start to look at the next age group up, which was 9 to 11, there's an equal number, if not greater number, of 9 to 11-year-old boys and girls. And they're not just out there jogging along with their families like they used to do. They're actually running at speed and posting some what I think are remarkable times.
And so we have the Ping family and the Retzer family, headed up by parents Megan Ping and Ryan Ping and Chris Retzer and Molly Crosswhite. And first we'll speak with Ryan and Chris, the dads. Now, the Retzer family lives here in Park City. The Pings are here off and on throughout the year. Is that right?
Yes, we came for a month in the winter, and we've been here a month this summer, so okay. We really enjoyed here.
And Ryan, running's in your family because you posted a phenomenal time also. You came in the top of the men overall.
Right. I swore I'd never be a runner. I played soccer in college, and I swore I'd never run a marathon. And then I met Megan, and that's been a big part of our relationship, just going on runs together. And, well, now I've run a lot of marathons, and we really enjoy running, so it is a big part of our family.
And so I think the question that parents in general would want to ask about getting your kids involved in a sport, we all want our kids to be involved in the sports that we love, and some of us scare our kids off of or away from those sports because we're a little overzealous, perhaps. And so what I'm curious about is, how did you get all of these kids, 6 kids in this room, who love the same sport that you love? And Ryan, you can start out, and then Chris, if you can hop in there.
Well, so Jameson, he would say that, I'm not going to be a runner. I'm going to be a professional soccer player.
And Jameson's 6 years old.
Right, yeah. So I think for us, it's just all about the atmosphere of the runs. You know, all of our kids, as soon as they could walk, have done little short fun runs. And I think that atmosphere is contagious. And then when you get started at something at a young age and you have fun doing it, naturally you put in the effort to become good. And once you become good, it's kind of addictive. You know, you want to do something that you're good at.
And we know that your kids compete. Grace competes nationally.
Yep, all three of the kids are going to be racing at Junior Olympics this next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Des Moines.
And I should mention that Grace, who's 10 years old, posted a time of 19:15 and was the, well, first in her age group, obviously, but get this, fourth woman overall.
Wow.
Fourth woman overall. I mean, that's something. So,
that
Chris,
really
your kids don't compete in running. They're just, they live here in Park City. Were they born and raised here?
Yeah, born and raised here. And, they've never done any, you know, sort of formal training or competition. I think we just get out for fun once in a while as a family to run. They all, you know, do different sports, and running just sort of is a part of some of our recreation and activity in general. Their grandpa, who's a longtime local, Jim Doylney, he's a longtime runner, done many marathons and races. And then their mom and myself both, I think, have run for fun and for fitness over the years, and also competed in a few race events here and there. And so just through their sports, we've seen that they, yeah, have a little bit of a knack for running. And so this event, for sure, I was actually pushing them in the stroller years and years ago, and so it's been a tradition for us. And so in the last couple of years, as they've been old enough to run it themselves, it's been fun to get them out there and actually have them run.
Well, and that's one of the interesting themes that I'm hearing from both families, is that, you know, things that inform your families and your kids to go out and run. When I was 6 years old, 6 years old, go run a 5K, run for 3 miles without stopping, without, you know, chasing something through the woods. I mean, that was inconceivable. And yet we have six-year-olds doing that. And I think there's something going on in Park City that informs the families, the kids, the parents, everybody. I mean, we have these Olympic legacy, venues, and we have Olympians who have called this place home, and we have so much that's just kind of happening in the air and the water that we drink and breathe from the standpoint of the environment, that it kind of results in what's happening with your kids. They go out and run 3 miles at pace for fun, which I think is kind of unusual.
Yeah, and I guess they might tell you it's not always fun. So as an example, you know, Caroline, who's six and ran this year, she ran it for the first time last year. And it was kind of a question mark, you know, is this going to work? Is this something you want to do? And so we actually went out and ran the course a week ahead of time. And it was interesting because we did the course, and there was a lot of walking, a lot of whining. It took us, I think, about 53 minutes. And then a week later, the race came, and there's all these people and energy and
the excitement.
And she crushed it.
She got first in her age group.
This year she did, and last year as a 5-year-old, she ran in 33 minutes. And so she shaved almost 20 minutes off of her warm-up time. And so I think some of that adrenaline and the competition, you know, really excited them. And so I guess the attitudes and spirit during the race are a little different than when we're just out.
Isn't that funny? It works even on kids. I mean, we all know as adults, right, that it works for us, the adrenaline and the crowd and all of that. Well, let's hear from these two six-year-olds. How about Jameson and Caroline? Why don't you hop up to the microphone there? And you may need to, yes, bend those microphones down, or yes, stand on the chairs. There we go. And so let's see. First of all, Jameson, you're 6 years old, and I think you were how many seconds behind Tim, did he say?
He's roughly 20 seconds behind me.
Okay. Do you remember seeing him in the race, or what do you remember seeing in the race? And what was your strategy, or the things you were thinking about, Jameson?
Were you thinking about Lauren?
I was trying to beat my sister.
Ah.
There we go. See, these are important things to know.
And you were pretty close to your sister. You were 1 second behind your sister, so she beat you by a second.
And we might add that that's 23 minutes and 46 seconds that Jameson came in on a 5K, which is way faster than I could do it. I know that. So what do you like about running?
Mm.
finish line with a nice finish pose.
How about when you finish? Is that the best part?
I like the snacks after.
Probably the finishing part.
Right. And how about for you, Caroline?
I like the beginning of the race.
The beginning. So that's really exciting. And why is that exciting?
Because you get to get your T-shirts and your numbers and all that.
Oh, okay. So it's not actually in the race, but it's kind of getting the swag bag and pinning your number on your shirt, and that gets you excited. And the running's just something you do, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you did great. You also won your age group, and you were the 100th girl to finish. So that's pretty good out of 1,121 runners. So congratulations. Well, why don't we have Henry and Lauren step up to the microphone here. Henry, you are the one that Tim has told the story about many times over. How do you like being the story that Tim has told many times over?
I don't know. It just seems like a lot of people know now, and they know that I'm a good runner.
Yeah. And how do you feel? Do your lungs burn when you're running? And, you know, as us adults, as old people, you know, our legs hurt and our lungs burn. How does your body feel when you run?
Since I've been running for a while, it doesn't really happen. But when I started running, yeah, my legs and my lungs burned. And that was not as good.
That's an interesting point, though. I mean, as the parents, do you notice that the kids exhaust themselves in these runs? I mean, do they get physically depleted, or is there any sort of sign that, you know, I mean, when I really push my cardiovascular system, I feel it, I know it. I know when I've gone past that threshold and have pushed myself into that zone that maybe only adults are capable of doing. But this is kind of the interesting theme for me, is these kids seem to be capable of doing things that I thought only adults were actually capable of doing things, and they're doing them at such an earlier age than I would have imagined.
Lauren, maybe you could talk about that.
What was the question? Are you talking
about pacing a little bit? Well, kind of pacing, the ability to, you know, push beyond that anaerobic threshold or come up to that anaerobic threshold would be the way I would describe it. And I'm sure, you know, the adults play with that, but the kids, they don't really... You know, they don't have an idea of those threshold limits. And yet, here they are running at a pace that has to be taxing their system to some degree. Do you notice that it's been taxed afterwards? Or
so what is it?
Do you feel really tired afterwards?
Do you feel really tired after 5K, or do you feel normal?
I feel tired afterwards.
But does that last for an hour, or for a few minutes, or for a day, or a couple of days?
Few minutes.
Yeah.
So, Lauren, when you're running, do you ever think to yourself, oh, I think I'm going a little bit too fast. I should slow down a little bit to make it to the end?
No.
So what kinds of thoughts do you have while you're racing?
Besides beating Jameson.
What do you think when you're trying to push yourself harder, for example?
And this is good. It shows that kids don't have to really think about it. They just do it, which is refreshing. And maybe we adults can take a lesson from that. So where do you hope to take your running? What do you hope to do with it? Do you want to be on a high school team when you get there? Or do you even think about the future?
I want to run... when I'm in high school, and yeah.
And next week you have a pretty big run. Mm-hmm. I mean, high school team is nothing compared to what you're doing next week. Where are you going, and what is going to be your race?
Where are you going next week?
a little thing called nationals.
Well. We're going to nationals next week, and
what race are you doing?
I'm doing the 800 and the 1500.
The 800 and the 1500. So how many times is that around a track for the 800?
The 800 is two laps, and the 1500 is
three and three-fourths.
Okay. Well, best of luck to you. That'll be great. And Henry, maybe you can take a lesson from Lauren, huh? Maybe we'll see you at Nationals too. It sounds like that might be in your future. Why don't we talk to the older kids?
So, Henry, do you see yourself running in things other than the fun run, or is running the fun run what your running is all about?
I don't know. When I grow up, I think I'll just be a normal runner and not compete too much. I might do some half marathons or triathlon.
And how did you feel in the fun run? Were you pushing yourself as hard as you could go, or did you feel like you could go harder, or did you have to slow down at any point during the race? Was there, you know, I know you were being coached along because I heard the coaching, but how did that work out for you?
I felt like I was at a good pace and I didn't need to slow down or speed up.
And how about afterwards? Were you tired and did you feel, you know, your body exhausted, or were you out playing soccer in the afternoon?
I was tired afterwards and my legs were a little sore for the rest of that day, but yeah.
Good deal. All right, well, Charlie and Grace, let's have you get up to the microphones here. And Grace is 10 years old. Charlie
I'm
is
11.
Oh, you're 11. Oh, happy birthday. Okay. You just turned 11. So two 11-year-olds. And Grace, you'll be headed to the national championships. And you already hold some records, I think, nationally. Is that right?
Yep.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, this year in April, I got a world record for the 10-year-old 5K in the time of 1802.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? So, Grace, how did the 5K fun run with the hills and the terrain, you know, winding through neighborhoods, how is that different than the course that you ran where you got the world record?
Well, the one that I ran and I got the world record on was I was racing on a track.
Right.
So it's all flat. And then the Park City Fun Run race is, there's a lot of hills, and it was like the first week we were in altitude too, so it made it a little harder.
You feel the altitude?
Just the first week.
Okay. So what? How does that feel to you? Just like you're out of breath more easily, or?
I don't know. It doesn't necessarily feel like I'm out of breath. It just makes things a little bit harder.
Okay. And Charlie, you were the first in your age group, and you were the 19th boy overall, man. It says man here, but I'm not going to say man. And so,
In the men's division,
right? Have you done a lot of racing in your life? And hop right up there to the microphone.
And 19th overall in the men's division. I mean, that's kind of stunning.
No, I don't do much racing. I just play lots and lots of soccer, and I run a lot in soccer. So
that's nothing but sprinting, right?
Yeah,
up and down.
Yeah.
Which school do you go to?
I go to Trailside, but next year I'll be going to Ecker.
All right.
And what does Henry, your brother, your younger brother, do for sports? You play soccer. Does he do any competitive sports like soccer?
He does gymnastics, but he doesn't do really any team sports. He does gymnastics and he does horseback riding sometimes too.
And nothing that entails running like your soccer does.
Yeah, not much.
And soccer is, as Lynn just pointed out, it's sprinting. It's a completely different form of running. So you've got, you know, different muscles involved. And here we have Charlie, who goes out from using his fast twitch muscles in sprinting and soccer, runs a 5K, which at 11 would have been inconceivable, as I said, for me when I was an 11-year-old. And he gets 19th overall in the men's category. Not too shabby.
Yeah, that's great. So do you have any other races coming up this summer?
I don't think so. I don't know.
And how does it go? Do your parents tell you that you're going to do a race, or do you say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, I'd like to go out and race?
Well, we've only done a couple of races, but like my dad said, we always do the 4th of July run because that's like a tradition kind of. And then sometimes, not usually though, we'll go out and we'll do one race like we did this year, this like inflatable 5K race, and it was like more of a fun race, but we don't do as much races.
Right. Okay. Well, I think with a couple minutes left, let's hear from the moms. I mean, you're a big part of what's gone on here. And Megan, you are a big runner, competitive runner yourself. Is that right? And I don't know about you, Molly.
As competitive as you can be at 37.
That's pretty competitive, yeah. I think.
And Megan, what about the altitude? One of the kids talked about, you know, feeling the effects of altitude. But I know altitude training is a big part of kind of elite athlete training. There's the train at sea level, sleep at altitude to kind of get the benefits, the blood benefits of being at altitude. Do you guys find that there's a benefit to your kids who are running competitively to spend time in Park City? Do they take that back to sea level and have an advantage?
I think Ryan would be a better person to ask that question because he kind of looks at the statistics and everything. But we haven't seen a big difference, I would say, in, as far as coming up here for the summer. And so I'm sure there is some benefit. There's been so many studies and research done. So,
But you don't sort of consciously say, we're going to Park City because it's at altitude and we're going to run a bunch there so that we get that benefit. That's not something that you incorporate into your kids and your family plan.
No, we come here because we love it,
yeah,
mainly.
Okay. Yeah. And how about you, Molly? I mean, kind of the same thing. You live here at altitude. You're surrounded by, you know, all the things that I talked about, the legacy benefits from the Olympics, and we've got this whole culture in town that's about, you know, not necessarily competing, but recreating, and we're starting to recreate at what seems to be, you could call it, an elite level, and your kids seem to be examples of that playing out.
Yeah, I think that just living in a community like Park City, everybody is so active that it seems normal to us, but anytime that we get out of Park City and other areas, we do get the oohs and ahs of the kind of athleticism that everybody has here that seems just normal.
But and your kids don't seem unusual in the Park City context, right? I mean, you look around, you're like, our kids are just like all the other kids, and they just ran a 5K at speed and, you know, all that. But from the Park City bubble, they're very normal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that I feel like our kids, and it seems like these other kids that are here in the studio today, have a little bit more of a drive to push themselves. I feel like most kids at this age, even with a lot of ability, don't tend to push themselves quite as hard, or maybe don't have quite as much of a competitive edge. But just overall in Park City, everybody is very active, and they're always out there doing things every single day. It's not normal to not have a sport or to have something that you're really good at or focused on.
So in your travels, you mentioned that when you go other places, there are oohs and ahs. Do you notice that, do you think what's happening in Park City is specific to Park City, or do you think there's a bigger phenomenon happening with kids in general that are starting to, you know, elevate their performance and their ability to recreate?
I think that you know, probably in other communities that are also very active and have an outdoor lifestyle, you'll probably be seeing kids pushing themselves a little bit more. But hopefully overall, it would be widespread. I'm not so sure about that, but that would be great if it was a global thing for kids.
Right.
Well, we're out of time. It's been great talking to every single one of you. I can't believe we got 8 people in front of the microphone this morning. So the Ping family, Grace, Lauren, and Jameis and the kids, Megan and Ryan, the parents, Charlie, Henry, and Caroline Retzer, along with parents Chris Retzer and Molly Crosswhite. Thanks so much for putting this all together and coming in, and best of luck with all your running endeavors. And we hope that you've inspired some listeners out there today. So best of luck at the national championships to the Ping family. And we'll be right back. We'll be speaking with Zelda LaGrange. She was the personal assistant to Nelson Mandela over a 16-year period. A very interesting story coming up. She's just written a new book. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with her.
Summer is here at Utah Olympic Park. Olympic-sized adventure awaits you on the zip lines, alpine slide, adventure ropes courses, and the always popular Summer Comet bobsled ride. Don't miss the Flying Ace All-Stars freestyle show every Sunday at 1 p.m. The park is open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with activities available beginning at 10 a.m. For activity tickets, season passes, and more information, go to UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows, ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. Well, our next guest, Zelda LaGrange, was born in 1970 in Boksburg, South Africa. She began working as a secretary for the South African government in 1992, and she joined the president's office in 1994 as a typist, then went on to become one of three of President Mandela's private secretaries in 1997. She ended up spending 16 years as Mandela's personal assistant and honorary granddaughter, white granddaughter. And she has written a new book, Good Morning, Mr. Mandela. She's joining us now by phone to talk about her new book and her experiences with this extraordinary person. Good morning to you, Ms. LaGrange.
Good morning, Lynn, and hi, Tim. How are you?
It's great to have you join us. We're so happy that you could. The book is really phenomenal, and I guess I just want to start back with, first by saying that this is a book about the man who you grew to love. You considered him to be almost a grandfather character in your life, and give us the term for that in Afrikaans.
Well, I use the word Kulu, which is an abbreviated version for Tata Mkulu, and that is the Khoza word, so not Afrikaans, but the Khoza word for grandfather. And after a few years, working for him for a few years, he started feeling like my grandfather. It felt like my grandfather, and, you know, it's a term of endearment as well, so I started using that.
And what is the word that you also use, Mahiba?
Madiba.
Madiba.
That's right.
Madiba.
And Madiba. It is a clan name in South Africa. So there's about 1,000 people in Mr. Mandela's clan that carries the Madiba name. But it's also become a term of endearment by ordinary South Africans and even people who didn't know him to refer to him when they speak to him, even when they address him, they would call him Madiba.
Zelda, I'm curious about how Nelson Mandela was transformed for you personally, and in the greater sense, the country, from a terrorist. He was described and categorized as a terrorist to the grandfather that everyone came to love. How did that happen for you personally? Because your family
Yes. Tim, you know what? Growing up in South Africa, we never questioned our own belief system. Society dictated to us that segregation was acceptable. So you never question it because your safety, your environment is never threatened in any way, and therefore the way you live becomes acceptable. So when he was released was really the first time I heard his name, but I still didn't know anything about him. In 1994, when I started working for him, and the first day I met him, when he extended his hand to me and he spoke to me in my home language, and he met me with sincerity and genuine emotion, I immediately started questioning my own beliefs, and I started questioning whether the things that I thought and that I believed and that I knew about him were all true. So it was a slow process, and it was a process of metamorphosis, as I describe it in the book, of coming to realize that the things that I was taught by society was completely wrong. And I wish I was, as a youngster, I wish I was inquisitive enough to realize also and to ask the questions about the way, the church and society influenced my world.
It's interesting. We, as we grow up, we're sort of indoctrinated in some ways by our parents. It's not very often that children begin to ask questions about the very core of their parents' beliefs.
Absolutely, Lynn. I think I think children these days have it better because of social media.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, even as a child growing up, and I'm 43 now, at the age of 15 or 16 or 18, I never read a newspaper. Now children are made more aware of what's happening around them because of social media and technology. But in those years, you know, we were oblivious to what was happening outside our immediate environment.
Mm. Now, you tell the story of, I suppose it was the day that Nelson Mandela was released from prison. You're in the swimming pool at your house, and you're you know, obviously raised in upper middle class, white, South African, very conservative, and your father comes out and he says, "Oh, today something like today's a bad day. The terrorist has been released."
Yes.
And you know, juxtapose that against that first meeting with Nelson Mandela when he spoke to you in your native tongue as he shook your hand, and it gives me chills to even think about it. But you started to cry.
Absolutely, because you feel responsible, you feel guilty in a way, because I could see that this man is really kind and generous and friendly, and there was no hostility in him whatsoever. So why was I brought up to believe, to be so afraid of him? Why did I fear him? And you know, so it's completely the opposite of what your brain expects.
Mm-hmm.
And he was genuinely interested in my well-being, asking about my upbringing, about my family, about my brother. And if a person shows you that kind of respect to acknowledge you, and I'm a typist in his office right now, so I'm a nobody, I'm a small person, yet he takes the time, about 7 minutes, to converse with me, it makes you feel important. And so my emotions, you know, breaking down and crying was a mixture of shock and also feeling responsible and guilty.
Mm. And Zelda, you describe it as a long process of transformation and metamorphosis, but actually it happened very quickly if you look at other examples through history where shifts in societal and cultural shifts that take generations. And what's happened in South Africa has kind of happened overnight, with Nelson Mandela being the catalyst for that change.
Yes, absolutely. I think you are right to some extent, but you know what? Still today in 2014 in South Africa, lots of people are still holding on to the past, and we have a very fresh and a new racial debate going on in South Africa, you know, of racism from both sides of the divide. So we are still grappling with those issues, and I don't think, you know, not the entire nation. There were brief moments when the entire nation bought into the reconciliation. But because of the economic disparity still in our society, it is those moments of reconciliation and unity have been short-lived in South Africa. We have to transform economically as a society before we will overcome, you know, all the scars of the past.
And Zelda, do you think that there's what's happening in South Africa can be used as a microcosm of, you know, different models around the world. But what it sounds like you learned was that to be conditioned and indoctrinated and told and never question the way you live, there's an inherent flaw in that system that really can't sustain itself over long periods of time, South Africa kind of being an example. But at the same time, there were only moments, as you say, where everyone came together in a unified belief. And there are other elements like the economy and the realities that are drivers that kind of overwhelm that human sense of connection and desire to unify and be expansive.
Yes, I think, Tim, it's a combination of a few things, but I think through my story, what I hope to achieve really is for people to start thinking for themselves at a much younger age than I did. The South African example can be used on many in many other countries. It is different, but also the same. But, you know, there's facets of our story that can be used. You as an individual and Mr. Mandela said this on countless occasions, you have to be prepared to change yourself before you can change anyone else. And so it all starts with the self. And while we are grappling with these issues of the Ukraine and the Middle East, we have to think of ourselves and think how we should start changing ourselves first before we start trying to find solutions for the Middle East and for the Ukraine. Self-respect is so absent in our everyday life. If you just look around you, and to me, what's happening around the world with all these violent incidences, it all boils down to respect of the self and respect for your fellow human being. It is much more complex than that. Of course it is, you know, there's political issues and so on. But I've been prejudiced. I've seen Nelson Mandela simplifying this for me in life, and it's all about respect.
So Zelda, was that self-respect that you're addressing as being probably the key element to this transformation, was that something that you had in you all the time and Nelson Mandela activated, or did he bring that to you as something completely new to you?
You know what, by forgiving us, by forgiving the white people, the Afrikaner people in South Africa, Nelson Mandela didn't only free himself, he freed us as well from guilt and from feeling that we have to carry this responsibility for the rest of our lives. We will never deny the past. We will never deny our history. But we've moved beyond that. You can't be building a future if you're constantly reminded of the past. So, yes, definitely, I think it's got a lot to do with that. But going forward, you have to take responsibility really also for where your thinking goes and how you transform yourself and how you ask questions again, as I said earlier.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Zelda LaGrange. She's the author of the new book, Good Morning, Mr. Mandela. And Zelda, I'm wondering about your personal transformation. I mean, you don't just go from being racist to not racist overnight, even though a figure so extraordinary as Mr. Mandela, he's so disarming and wonderful and approving. It seems as though that's the portrayal that you have of him.
Forgiving.
And forgiving was, one of the things that he lived by, one of the tenets he lived by. But how did you do it? What were some of the challenges for you as you shed that racism that you learned?
Yes, you know what? I definitely, Lynn, describe it in the book. I think also in great detail when I say he daily chiseled away my racism. It wasn't a process, you know, it didn't happen overnight. I had to change my whole being, my whole thinking, my frame of reference about people. And going back to what I just said, you know, it's all about respect. Do I have self-respect, first of all, and how I relate in how I relate to other people. And that is one of the greatness, the great things of the man, of Nelson Mandela, was his ability to relate to people and to communicate to people without prejudice. And by doing that, he could forgive even his enemies, even the people who incarcerated him. So it's a complex process that I'm trying to explain now in a very simple way. But it's about thinking daily. You know, do I respect myself? If I relate to this person in a hostile manner, does that show that I have self-respect? So it's you have to give people respect, not because of their character, but because of your own character.
How about your feelings towards your family and your upbringing? Did you harbor any resentment once you spent years around Mr. Mandela and saw who he was as a person? Did you have difficulty with your family?
Yes, at first I did, and I had difficulty marrying the present and the past. So I spent a great deal of time speaking with people, enlightened people, you know, liberal free thinkers, trying to understand my own past and also reconciling with my own past. So it was a process. It took a lot of time, but also through this all, Mr. Mandela has taught me that I don't have to take responsibility for other people. You know, they have their own process. You don't have to try and force people to change. It's more important that you focus on yourself and your own process.
What influence did your role as Nelson Mandela's personal secretary over all of those years, 16 years, have on your family?
Well, you know what, my family, my parents are extremely humble and grounded people, so it didn't affect them in a great way, I would say. I never really shared much of my experiences with them. I'm not a great talker at home. You know, that's my space where I can be myself and not be bothered about anything from my job. They obviously inquired about Mr. Mandela's well-being and so on, but it was never part of our family life, and it's still the one place where I can be safe. And only when my parents read the book now in the last couple of months, my mother called and she said, "We didn't realize you went through all of this in the past couple of years." So that gives you a good indication of how unaffected they remained to all of this. They've just been wonderful, humble people, and always being there when I needed them. But beyond that, I didn't really involve them in my professional life.
Zelda, how long did Mr. Mandela spend in prison? I forget the details of
27.
That.
27. It's 27 years, yes, of which 18 years was on Robben Island, which mm-hmm. is probably the same as your Alcatraz, yeah.
And during that time, I'm assuming, and I think I know this from understanding and having heard his story before, some details of it, that he went through a very significant personal transformation. But who was he prior to going into prison, and who was he when he came out? Because you talk about this man who's very enlightened, very conscious, talking, you know, full of forgiveness, and you know, almost like a religious character or a philosopher. Was he that person when he went into prison?
No, not at all. And he, I don't know where, but he can be quoted on that when he said, you know, he was a very angry young man. He was a rebel. He was a, you know, he was a reactionary. And yet when he came out of prison, it was all about peace and reconciliation and serenity and always extending the hand. It was totally a different person as well. But one of the important things that one of his comrades, Mr. Ahmed Kathrada, said is that they decided in prison that forgiveness was the answer. It was a choice to forgive. So they had to, I mean, spending so much time in prison, you know, what, you know, you contemplate these things, obviously, and then coming to the conclusion that peace is the only way forward, that takes a lot of time to get to that realization and not be full of hatred. So he had to be a visionary, really, to come to that kind of conclusion that, you know, peace is the answer and the only answer. And, obviously, with the support of his colleagues, that was a common thread throughout the liberation struggle participants then at that point. When we come out of prison, we are going to forgive, and this is going to be our message to the world. And they successfully conveyed that message.
Mm. It's a beautiful story. Our guest is Zelda Lagrange. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to go on speaking with you forever. I'm sure your stories go on forever. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning.
Thanks, Lynn, and thank you, Tim. And thanks for having me, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye now. And that was Zelda Lagrange. Her book is Good Morning, Mr. Mandela. She speaks about the 16 years she spent as Nelson Mandela's personal assistant and secretary. And to her, he was her grandfather of sorts, a really touching story. And just wanted to mention one of the things that she pointed out in her book, and the prologue, I believe, was that this was never an airing of dirty laundry at all about Nelson Mandela, nor was it a sharing of his deepest secrets. It was simply a story of this man that she that she grew to love so much. And she was really his confidant. And many times I wanted to ask her about the many different meetings that she had with just Mandela and some other state leader. You know, she would sit with Mandela and President Clinton. And just fascinating stories about those types of meetings.
The fly on the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows, ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Hi, this is Kevin Stocking, President of Heber Valley Bank. We offer a full spectrum of loans for lots, construction, HELOCs, commercial, and personal needs. Our loan decisions are made locally. Heber Valley Bank is a proud supporter of KPCW. We are located in Heber City and Midway and at Grand Valley Bank in Park City. HeberValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for 91.9 FM KPCW comes from Sundance Institute, presenting a screening of Ping Pong Summer on Friday, July 25th at 9 p.m. at City Park in Park City. Presented in collaboration with Park City Recreation, come play ping pong in the park starting at 7 p.m. 80s attire is encouraged. Tickets are not required to attend. Showtimes and details at sundance.org/Utah. The Sundance Institute is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Want to thank our guests today, all of those little accomplished runners, the Ping family, Grace, Lauren and Jameson, and the Retzer family, Charlie, Henry, and Caroline. And
I think we have a lab here in Park City. I mean, we're seeing a phenomenon play out in our town that we kind of take for granted. And just living here and having the altitude and having the various, you know, the Olympians who now populate our community and inform the way we recreate and interact. And, you know, these things like Power Hour, where 60 moms show up every day. They have two classes a day. So that's over 100 moms with kids doing Power Hour workout out at the Matt Canoop Park every day. I mean, stuff like that. We just take it for granted. And I don't think that's particularly normal. And I think it's really interesting to look at the data from something like the Fun Run and go, wow, look at all these little kids. And I'm talking, you know, little. How do you define and classify little? But I'd say anybody under 14 years old is kind of a little kid. And then to have these six-year-olds winning their age groups, it's just, there's something very interesting about that. Maybe a little bizarre, but very interesting. And I think we have a lab that if we chose to look at and study, we'd find some very fascinating trends happening with our children and with ourselves. I mean, we compete, you know, recreationally at a pretty high level, but then look how it transfers to the younger children in the community.
It's interesting that it can go either way for parents who are quite competitive. Their kids, like these that were in the studio, can come along with them and find competition exciting and fun. And some can go the opposite.
Absolutely.
The opposite way. So again, as a parent, it's how to keep your kids interested and involved in doing the things that you love. And I think it all comes back to not pushing them beyond what is very obvious and you know, and enjoyable to them.
Well, I think it's also having many options for your kids. You know, it's and having them come along with what you want to do can sometimes backfire. But encouraging them and supporting them in finding what they want to do, I think, is critical. And that may not always align with what you want to do, but I think it's fascinating when it does. And I think we had two examples of families with kids where the kids are doing it because they want to. And one family is excelling at a national level by going to nationals and little Grace, who set the world record for 10-year-olds in the 5K, and yet another family who just lives here and by the virtue of living here experiences this amazing.
Let's thank our underwriters, and you're right.
Park City Clinic, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa, Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, and Vinto Pizzeria.
This is KPCW Park City.
Shot down over eastern Ukraine last week are now in Britain. NPR's Ari Shapiro reports analysts will study the data on the flight recorders with hopes they'll learn more about the moments leading.